Chapter 1. We've got a contract for you, Mama Kay said. As always, she sat like a queen, her back straight, sumptuous dress perfect, hair immaculately coiffed, if gray at the roots. This morning, she had dark circles under her eyes. Kylar guessed that none of the Sakage's surviving leaders had slept much since the Kalidoran invasion. Good morning to you, too, Kylar said, settling into the wing-backed chair in the study. Mama Kay didn't turn to face him, looking instead out her window. Last night's rain had quenched most of the fires in the city, but many still smoked, bathing the city in a crimson dawn. The waters of the Plith River that divided rich eastern Cenaria from the Warrens looked as red as blood. Kylar wasn't sure that was all because of the smoke-obscured sun, either. In the week since the coup, the Kalidoran invaders had massacred thousands. Mama Kay said, There's a wrinkle. The deader knows it's coming. How's he know? The Sakage wasn't usually so sloppy. We told him. Kylar rubbed his temples. The Sakage would only tell someone so that if the attempt failed, the Sakage wouldn't be committed. That meant the deader could only be one man, Cenaria's conqueror, Kalidor's god-king, Garath Ursul. I just came to get my money, Kylar said. All of Durzo's... My safe houses burned down. I only need enough to bribe the gate guards. He'd been giving her a cut of his wages to invest since he was a child. She should have plenty for a few bribes. Mama Kay flipped silently through sheets of rice paper on her desk and handed one to Kylar. At first, he was stunned by the numbers. He was involved in the illegal importation of riot weed, and half a dozen other addictive plants, owned a racehorse, and a stake in a brewery and several other businesses, part of a loan shark's portfolio, and owned partial cargoes of items like silks and gems that were legitimate, except for the fact the Sakage paid 20% in bribes rather than 50% in tariffs. The sheer amount of information on the page was mind-boggling. He didn't know what half of it meant. I own a house? Kylar asked. Owned, Mama Kay said. This column denotes merchandise lost in the fires or looting. There were checks next to all but a silk expedition and one for riot weed. Almost everything he had owned was lost. Neither expedition will return for months, if at all. If the God King keeps seizing civilian vessels, they won't come back at all. Of course, if he were dead, he could see where this was going. This says my share is still worth 10 to 15,000. I'll sell it to you for 1,000. That's all I need. She ignored him. They need a third wet boy to make sure it works. 50,000 gunders for one kill, Kylar. With that much, you can take Eline and Uli anywhere. You'll have done the world a good turn, and you'll never have to work again. It's just one last job. He wavered for a moment. There's always one last job. I'm finished. This is because of Eline, isn't it? Mama Kay asked. Mama Kay, do you think a man can change? She looked at him with a profound sadness. No. And he'll end up hating anyone who asks him to. Kylar got up and walked out the door. In the hallway, he ran into Jarl. Jarl was grinning like he used to when they were growing up on the streets, and he was up to no good. Jarl was wearing what must be the new fashion, a long tunic with exaggerated shoulders, paired with slim trousers tucked into high boots. It looked vaguely Kalidoran. His hair was worked into elaborate micro-braids, capped with gold beads that set off his black skin. I've got the perfect job for you, Jarl said, his voice lowered, but unrepentant about eavesdropping. No killing? Kylar asked. Not exactly.
Your Holiness, the cowards stand ready to redeem themselves.
Verdmeister Nef Dada announced, his voice carrying over the crowd. He was an old man, veiny, liver-spotted, stooped, stinking of death held at bay with magic. His breath rattling from the exertion of climbing up the platform in Cenaria Castle's great yard. 12 knotted cords hung over the shoulders of his black robes for the 12 shuras he'd mastered. Nef knelt with difficulty and offered a handful of straw to the God King. God King Gareth Orsul stood on the platform inspecting his troops. Front and center were nearly 200 Graivar Highlanders, tall, barrel-chested, blue-eyed savages who wore their black hair short and their mustaches long. On either side stood the other elite Highland tribes that had captured the castle. Beyond them waited the rest of the regular army that had marched into Cenaria since the liberation. Mists rose from the Plith River on either side of the castle and slid under the rusty teeth of the iron portcullises to chill the crowd. The Graivar had been broken into 15 groups of 13 each, and they alone had no weapons, armor, or tunics. They stood in their trousers, pale faces fixed, but sweating instead of shivering in the cool autumn morning. There was never commotion when the God King inspected his troops, but today the silence ached, despite the thousands gathered to watch. Gareth had gathered every soldier possible and allowed the Cenarian servants and nobles and small folk to watch as well. Meisters and their black and red half-cloaks stood shoulder to shoulder with robed verdmeisters, soldiers, crofters, coopers, nobles, field hands, maids, sailors, and Cenarian spies. The God King wore a broad white cloak edged with ermine thrown back to make his broad shoulders look huge. Beneath that was a sleeveless white tunic over wide white trousers. All the white made his pallid Caladoran skin look ghostly and drew sharp attention to the veer playing across his skin. Black tendrils of power rose to the surface of his arms. Great knots rose and fell, knots edged with thorns that moved not just back and forth, but up and down in waves, pressing out from his skin. Claws raked his skin from beneath. Nor were his veer confined to his arms. They rose to frame his face. They rose to his bald scalp and pierced the skin, forming a thorny, quivering black crown. Blood trickled down the sides of his face. For many Cenarians, it was their first glimpse of the God King. Their jaws hung slack. They shivered as his gaze passed over them. It was exactly as he intended. Finally, Gareth selected one of the pieces of straw from Nef Dada and broke it in half. He threw away one half and took 12 full-length pieces.
"Thus shall Kali speak," he said, his voice robust with power.
He signaled the Graivar to climb the platform. During the liberation, they had been ordered to hold this yard to contain the Cenarian nobles for slaughter. Instead, the Highlanders had been routed, and Terra Grayson and her nobles had escaped. That was unacceptable, inexplicable, uncharacteristic for the fierce Graivar. Gareth didn't understand what made men fight one day and flee the next. What he did understand was shame. For the past week, the Graivar had been mucking stables, emptying chamber pots, and scrubbing floors. They had not been allowed to sleep, instead spending the nights polishing their betters' armor and weapons. Today, they would expiate their guilt, and for the next year they would be eager to prove their heroism. As he approached the first group with Neff at his side, Gareth calmed the veer from his hands. When the men drew their straws, they must think it not the working of magic or the God King's pleasure that spared one and condemned another. Rather, it was simple fate, the inexorable consequence of their own cowardice. Gareth held up his hands, and together, all the Calidorans prayed. Calivos, Calivos ras in me, Cali me virtu rapt, recuvirtum defite. As the words faded, the first soldier approached. He was barely 16, the least fringe of a mustache on his lip. He looked on the verge of collapse as his eyes flitted from the God King's icy face to the straws. His naked chest shone with sweat in the rising morning light, his muscles twitching. He drew a straw. It was long. Half of the tension whooshed out of his body, but only half. The young man next to him, who looked so alike he must have been his older brother, licked his lips and grabbed a straw. It was short. Queasy relief washed over the rest of the squad, and the thousands watching who couldn't possibly see the short straw knew that it had been drawn from their reactions. The man who'd drawn the short straw looking at his little brother. The younger man looked away. The condemned man turned disbelieving eyes on the God King and handed him the short straw. Gareth stepped back.
Kali has spoken, he announced.
There was a collective intake of breath, and he nodded to the squad. They closed on the young man, every one of them, even his brother, and began beating him. It would have been faster if Gareth had let the squad wear gauntlets, or use the butts of spears or the flat of blades, but he thought it was better this way. When the blood began flowing and spraying off flesh as it was pummeled, it shouldn't get on the squad's clothing. It should get on their skin. Let them feel the warmth of the young man's blood as he died. Let them know the cost of cowardice. Calidorans did not flee. The squad attacked with gusto. The circle closed and screams rose. There was something intimate about naked meat slapping naked meat. The young man disappeared, and all that could be seen was elbows rising and disappearing with every punch, and feet being drawn back for new kicks. And moments later, blood. With the short straw, the young man had become their weakness. It was Kali's decree. He was no longer brother or friend. He was all they had done wrong. In 2 minutes, the young man was dead. The squad reformed, blood spattered and blowing hard from exertion and emotion. They didn't look at the corpse at their feet. Gareth regarded each in turn, meeting the eyes of every one and lingering on the brother. Standing over the corpse, Gareth extended a hand. The veer poked out of his wrist and extended, claw-like, ragged, and gripped the corpse's head. Then the claws convulsed and the head popped with a wet sound that left dozens of Cenarians retching.
Your sacrifice is accepted. Thus are you cleansed, he announced,
and saluted them. They returned his salute proudly and took their places back in the formation in the courtyard as the body was dragged away. He motioned the next squad. The next 14 iterations would be nothing but more of the same. Though tensions still arced through every squad, even the squads who'd finished would lose friends and family in other squads, Gareth lost interest.
Neff, tell me what you've learned about this man, this Night Angel, who killed my son.
Cenaria Castle wasn't high on Kylar's list of places to visit. He was disguised as a tanner, a temporary dye staining his hands and arms to the elbow, a spattered woolen tradesman's tunic, and a number of drops of a special perfume his dead master, Durzo Blint, had developed. He reeked only slightly less than a real tanner would. Durzo had always preferred disguises of tanners, pig farmers, beggars, and other types that respectable people did their best not to see, because they couldn't help but smell them. The perfume was applied only to the outer garments, so if need arose, they could be shed. Some of the stench would still cling, but every disguise had drawbacks. The art was matching the drawbacks to the job. East Kingsbridge had burned during the coup, and though the Meisters had repaired most of its length, it was still closed. So Kylar crossed West Kingsbridge. The Caladoran guards barely glanced at him as he passed them. It seemed everyone's attention, even the Meisters, was riveted to a platform in the center of the castle yard and a group of Highlanders standing bare-chested in the cold. Kylar ignored the squad on the platform as he scanned for threats. He still wasn't sure if Meisters could see his talent, though he suspected they couldn't as long as he wasn't using it. Their abilities seemed much more tied to smell than magi's, which was the main reason he'd come as a tanner. If a Meister came close, Kylar could only hope that mundane smells interfered with magical ones. Four guards stood on each side of the gate, six on each segment of the diamond-shaped castle wall, and perhaps 1,000 in formation in the yard, in addition to the 200 or so Graivar Highlanders. In the crowd of several thousand, 50 Meisters were placed at regular intervals. In the center of it all, on the temporary platform, were a number of Cenarian nobles, mutilated corpses, and God-King Gareth Orsul himself, speaking with a Vurdmeister. It was ridiculous, but even with the number of soldiers and Meisters here, this was probably the best chance a wet boy would have to kill the man. But Kylar wasn't here to kill. He was here to study a man for the strangest job he'd ever accepted. He scanned the crowd for the man Jarl had told him about and found him quickly. Baron Kiroth had been a vassal of the Gyres. With his lord dead and his lands close to the city, he'd been one of the first Cenarian nobles to bend the knee to Gareth Orsul. He was a fat man with a red beard cut in the angular lowland Caladoran style, a large crooked nose, weak chin, and great bushy eyebrows. Kylar moved closer. Baron Kiroth was sweating, wiping his palms on his tunic, speaking nervously to the Caladoran nobles he stood with. Kylar was easing around a tall, stinking blacksmith when the man suddenly threw an elbow into Kylar's solar plexus. The blow knocked the wind from Kylar, and even as he hunched over, the Kakari pooled in his hand and formed a punch dagger.
"You want a better look, you get here early like the rest of us did," the blacksmith said.
He folded his arms, pushing up his sleeves to show off massive biceps. With effort, Kylar willed the Kakari back into his skin and apologized, eyes downcast. The blacksmith sneered and went back to watching the fun. Kylar settled for a decent view of Baron Kiroth. The God King had worked his way through half of the squads, and Sakage bookies were already taking bets on which number out of each group of 13 would die. The Caladoran soldiers noticed. Kylar wondered how many Cenarians would die for the bookies' callousness when the Caladoran soldiers went roaming the city tonight, in grief for their dead and fury at how the Sakage fouled everything it touched.
"I've got to get out of this damned city."
The next squad had made it through 10 men without one drawing the short straw. It was almost worth paying attention, as the men got more and more desperate, as each of their neighbors was spared, and their own chances became grimmer. The 11th man, 40-ish, and all sinew and gristle, pulled the short straw. He chewed on the end of his mustache as he handed the straw back to the God King, but otherwise didn't betray any emotion. Neff glanced to where Duchess Jadwin and her husband were seated on the platform.
I examined the throne room and I felt something I've never encountered before. The entire castle smells of the magic that killed so many of our Meisters, but some spots in the throne room simply don't. It's like there was a fire in the house, but you walk into one room, and it doesn't smell like smoke.
Blood was flying now, and Gareth was reasonably certain that the man must be dead, but the squad continued beating. 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 That doesn't match what we know of the Silver Kakari, Gareth said.
No, Your Holiness. I think there's a 7th Kakari. A secret Kakari. I think it negates magic, and I think this Night Angel has it.
Gareth thought about that as the ranks reformed, leaving a corpse before them. The man's face had been utterly destroyed. It was impressive work. The squad had either worked hard to prove their commitment, or they hadn't liked the poor bastard. Gareth nodded, pleased. He extended the veerclaw again and crushed the corpse's head.
Your sacrifice is accepted. Thus are you cleansed.
Two of his bodyguards moved the corpse to the side of the platform. They were stacked there, in their gore, so that even though the Cenarians couldn't see each man's death, they would see the aftermath. When the next squad began, Gareth said,
A Kakari hidden for 700 years? What mastery does it bestow?
Hiding.
What does that do for me?
Your Holiness, with such a Kakari, you or your agent could walk into the heart of the Chantry and take every treasure they have. Unseen. It's possible your agent could enter Ezra's Wood itself and take 7 centuries' worth of artifacts for you. There would then be no more need for armies or subtlety. At one stroke, you could take all Mid-Cryu by the throat.
My agent. No doubt Neff would bravely volunteer to undertake the perilous task.
Still, the mere thought of such a Kakari occupied Gareth through the deaths of another teenager, 2 men in their prime, and a seasoned campaigner wearing one of the highest awards for merit that the God King bestowed. That man alone had something akin to treason in his eyes.
Look into it, Gareth said.
He wondered if Kali knew of this 7th Kakari. He wondered if Dorian knew of it. Dorian, his first acknowledged son. Dorian, who would have been his heir. Dorian, the prophet. Dorian, the betrayer. Dorian had been here, Gareth was sure of it. Only Dorian could have brought Curoch, Jorsan Alkesti's mighty sword. Some Magus had appeared with it for a single moment and obliterated 50 Meisters and 3 Verdmeisters, then disappeared. Neff was obviously waiting for Gareth to ask about it, but Gareth had given up on finding Curoch. Dorian was no fool. He wouldn't have brought Curoch so close if he thought he might lose it. How do you outmaneuver a man who can see the future? The God King squinted as he crushed another head. Every time he did that, he got blood on his own snow-white clothing. It was deliberate, but irritating all the same, and there was nothing dignified about having blood squirt in your eye.
Your sacrifice is accepted, he told the men. Thus are you cleansed.
He stood at the front of the platform as the squad took its place back on the parade ground. For the entire review, he hadn't turned to face the Cenarians who were sitting on the platform behind him. Now he did. The Veer flared to life as he turned. Black tendrils crawled up his face, swarmed over his arms, through his legs, and even out from his pupils. He allowed them a moment to suck in light, so that the God King appeared to be an unnatural splotch of darkness in the rising morning light. Then he put an end to that. He wanted the nobles to see him. There wasn't an eye that wasn't huge. It wasn't solely the Veer or Gareth's inherent majesty that stunned them. It was the corpses, stacked like cored wood to each side and behind him, framing him like a picture. It was the blood and brain-spattered white clothing he wore. He was awesome in his power and terrible in his majesty. Perhaps, if she survived, he'd have Duchess Trudonna Jadwin paint the scene. The God King regarded the nobles, and the nobles on the platform regarded the God King. He wondered if any of them had yet counted their own number. 13. He extended his handful of straw toward his nobles. "Come," he told them. "Kali will cleanse you." This time, he had no intention of letting fate decide who would die. Commander Gare looked at the God King.
"Your Holiness, there must be some..."
He stopped. God Kings don't make mistakes. Gare's face drained of color. He drew a long straw. It was several moments before it occurred to him not to appear too relieved. Most of the rest were lesser nobles, the men and women who'd made the late King Aelin Gunder the Ninth's government work. They had all been so easily subverted. Extortion could be so simple. But it gained Gareth nothing to kill these peons, even if they had failed him. That brought him to a sweating Trudonna Jadwin. She was the 12th in the line, and her husband was last. Gareth paused. He let them look at each other. They knew. Everyone who was watching knew that one or the other of them would die, and it all depended on Trudonna's draw. The Duke was swallowing compulsively. Gareth said, "Out of all the nobles here, you, Duke Jadwin, are the only one who was never in my employ. So obviously you didn't fail me. Your wife, on the other hand, did."
"What?"
the Duke asked. He looked at Trudonna. "Didn't you know she was cheating on you with the prince?" "She murdered him on my orders," Gareth said. There was something beautiful about standing in the middle of what should be an intensely private moment. The Duke's fear-pale face went gray. He had clearly been even less receptive than most cuckolds. Gareth could see realization pounding the poor man. Every dim suspicion he'd ever brushed aside, every poor excuse he ever heard was hammering him. Intriguingly, Trudonna Jadwin looked stricken. Her expression wasn't the self-righteousness Gareth expected. He'd thought she'd point the finger, tell her husband why it was his fault. Instead, her eyes spoke pure culpability. Gareth could only guess that the Duke had been a decent husband, and she knew it. She had cheated because she had wanted to, and now, 2 decades of lies were collapsing. "Trudonna," the God King said before either could speak. "You have served well, but you could have served better. So here is your reward and your punishment." He extended the straws toward her. "The short straw is on your left." She looked into Gareth's veer-darkened eyes, and at the straws, and then into her husband's eyes. It was an immortal moment. Gareth knew that the plaintive look in the Duke's eyes would haunt Trudana Jadwin for as long as she lived. The God King had no doubt what she would choose, but obviously Trudana thought herself capable of self-sacrifice. Steeling herself, she reached for the short straw, then stopped. She looked at her husband, looked away, and pulled the long straw for herself. The Duke howled. It was lovely. The sound pierced every Cenarian heart in the courtyard. It seemed pitched perfectly to carry the God King's message. This could be you. As the nobles, including Trudana, surrounded the Duke with death in their hearts, every one of them feeling damned for their participation, but participating all the same, the Duke turned to his wife. "I love you, Trudana," he said. "I've always loved you." Then he pulled his cloak up over his face and disappeared in the thudding of flesh. The God King could only smile. As Trudana Jadwin hesitated over her choice, Kylar thought that if he had Mama Kay's job, now would be the perfect moment to strike. Every eye was on the platform. Kylar had turned toward Baron Kirov, studying what shock and horror looked like on his face. But when he noticed that only 5 guards stood on the wall beyond the Baron, he recounted quickly. 6. But one of them held a bow and a handful of arrows in his bow hand. A harsh crack sounded from the center of the yard, and Kylar caught a glimpse of the back section of the temporary platform splitting off and falling. Something flashing, scintillating colors flew up into the air. As everyone else turned toward it, Kylar turned away. The sparkle bomb exploded with a small concussion and an enormous flash of white light. As hundreds of civilians and soldiers alike cried out, blinded, Kylar saw the 6th soldier on the wall draw an arrow. It was Jonas Severing, a wet boy with 50 kills to his name, a gold-tipped arrow streaked toward the God King. The God King's hands were clasped over his eyes, but shields like bubbles were already blooming around him. The arrow hit the outermost shield, stuck, and burst into flame as the shield popped. Another arrow was already on the way, and it passed through the fraying outer shield and hit one closer in. The next popped, and the next, as Jonas Severing shot with amazing speed. He was using his talent to hold his spare arrows in midair so that as soon as he released a shot, the next arrow was already coming to his fingertips. The shields were breaking faster than the God King could reform them. People were screaming, blinded. The 50 Meisters around the yard were throwing shields up around themselves, knocking anyone nearby off their feet. The wet boy who'd been hiding beneath the platform jumped onto the platform on the God King's blind side. He hesitated as one last wavering shield bloomed inches from the God King's skin, and Kylar saw that he wasn't a wet boy at all. It was a child of perhaps 14, Jonas Severing's apprentice. The boy was so focused on the God King, he didn't keep low, didn't keep moving. Kylar heard the snap of a bowstring nearby and saw the boy go down even as the God King's last shield popped. People were charging toward the gates, trampling their neighbors. Several of the Meisters, still blinded and panicked, were flinging green missiles indiscriminately into the crowd and the soldiers around them. One of the God King's bodyguards tried to tackle the God King to get him out of danger. Dazed, the God King misinterpreted the move, and a hammer of Veer blasted the huge Highlander through the nobles on the platform. Kylar turned to find who'd killed the wet boy's apprentice. Not 10 paces away stood Hugh Gibbet, the butcher who had slaughtered Logan Gyre's entire family, the best wet boy in the city, now that Durzo Blint was dead. Jonas Severing was already fleeing, not sparing a moment of anguish for his dead apprentice. Hugh released a second arrow, and Kylar saw it streak into Jonas Severing's back. The wet boy pitched forward off the wall and out of view, but Kylar had no doubt he was dead. Hugh Gibbet had betrayed the Sakage, and now he'd saved the God King. The Kakari was in Kylar's hand before he was even aware of it. What? I wouldn't kill the architect of Cenaria's destruction, but now I'm going to kill a bodyguard? Of course, calling Hugh Gibbet a bodyguard was like calling a bear a furry animal. But the point remained. Kylar pulled the Kakari back into his skin. Ducking, so Hugh wouldn't see his face, Kylar joined the streams of panicked Cenarians flooding out of the castle gate.